This Dharma Talk, The Healing Power of Compassion by Mayor Chapman, was recorded at the Women's Retreat on December 15, 2018 at Holy Wisdom Monastery in Madison, Wisconsin.
On a retreat with Pema Chodron, at a time when our country had just engaged in some new aggressive war activity, the student pleadingly asked her, "What should we do about this, Pema? What's needed to end this violence and create real peace on the planet? Please tell us." It felt like all 300 of us were like leaning forward, so desperately wanting to hear her healing wisdom. And she was quiet for a really long time, pondering, it looked like. And then she very somberly said, "Compassion is our only hope." Then not too long after that, I attended teachings from His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And in response to a similar question, he said, "It is only the radical mind state of compassion that can truly transform suffering and create peace within ourselves, each other, and the planet." Clearly, you know, there's so much suffering in our world. Even though the Buddha might say this is par for samsara, this realm of existence is always ridden with misery because our minds get so caught in hatred, greed, and delusion. Still, it does seem like right now things are far worse than usual, doesn't it? Seems like it, yeah, right? So many people are living in war zones or homeless, fleeing from terrible violence, living in poverty, starving, uprooted from floods and fires and hurricanes and earthquakes and the effects of global warming. And increasing political polarization fueled by crazed world leaders whipping up fear in our minds and hearts provokes some to act out aggressively against their neighbors, which disturbs us even more. And within our own lives as well, there's no dearth of suffering. As you've been opening your mind, heart, and body on this retreat, besides moments of calmness and peacefulness, hopefully you've experienced some, I imagine you've been running into your own suffering, physical pain, emotional distress, worries about yourself, your dear ones, finding your mind caught in stories and reactions that create a host of miseries. The First Noble Truth says, this is how it is. Even though there is joy and loveliness in being alive, there is also dukkha, suffering, and no one escapes this. Although we can dial down our suffering tremendously through these practices and teachings, some misery is unavoidable. The Buddha was kind enough to recap this through what are called the five remembrances. And they are, 1, I am of the nature to grow old. There's no way to escape growing old. 2, I am of the nature to have ill health. There is no way to escape having ill health. 3, I am of the nature to die. There is no way to escape death. And 4, all that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. And 5, my actions are my only true belongings. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. They are the ground on which I stand. Beyond these unavoidables, all the other ways that we suffer are said to be caused by our mind's conditioned habits and our misunderstanding of reality, of how things actually are. So, okay, this is stark and clear, isn't it? And all this suffering can certainly feel overwhelming. Yet knowing we don't want to contribute to the reactive aggression that's amping up in our world, these wise teachers say compassion is our only hope. So let's explore this a bit. What is compassion? Why is it so essential? And how do we cultivate it? Compassion is classically defined as the natural quivering of the open heart in response to pain. The natural quivering of the open heart in response to pain. And it arouses the feeling of sympathy, to feel sorrow for the pain one is experiencing. It's the natural warmth and tenderness of the open heart, that soft, tender spot we all have, that naturally arises when we are wise in our understanding of the truth of suffering. It enables us to be stable, gentle, and accepting of pain, rather than resisting it or being consumed by it. It reminds us that when conditions are right, we all experience misery. Out of this deep understanding, compassion is the heartfelt wish for all beings without exception, including ourselves, to be happy and free from suffering. Compassion is part of our true nature, our basic goodness, our inner gold. It's a natural quality of our open, spacious, unconditioned mind. It's called Karuna in Pali, the language spoken in the Buddhist time, and is part of what are called the heavenly abodes, the highest realms of the heart, along with loving kindness, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. In Buddhist iconography, compassion is embodied in the female bodhisattva, Kuan Yin. She's sitting up here right behind us. And she's described classically as she who hears the cries of the world. Called Avalokitesvara in India and Chenrezig in Tibet, it's said that when Kuan Yin listens and hears all the suffering in the world, she feels enormous sadness for the human predicament. Are all being caught in samsara, the cycle of suffering, and she reaches out to help any way that she can. Though compassion is all about opening our heart to pain, the truth is we don't like pain. It makes us feel vulnerable and shaky, both our own and others' pain. So we're afraid of it, and we avoid it as much as we can. We've all learned ways to armor our naturally open hearts in attempts to protect ourselves from feeling pain. We do this by shutting down to the other person when we can't bear their distress any longer. We do it by shutting down to ourselves when we've reached our limit with our own pain. And we use those various exit strategies, like numbing out by overeating or drinking, getting busy, othering, checking our phones, blaming others, or turning against ourselves, including telling ourselves to get over it, get a grip, don't be so sensitive. Maybe you've been noticing some of these reactions as you've been practicing. Yet we know resisting what's difficult only solidifies it and keeps us caught in it. Plus, resistance makes us contract and tighten, and this cuts us off from our naturally spacious minds and hearts, and we lose access to our wisdom and feel more isolated and disempowered and hopeless. It's a no-win trap, really. Clearly, resisting pain when it's here isn't wise, isn't skillful. As a therapist, I've witnessed the healing power of compassion in my work, and I've really come to believe that until we're able to offer compassion to our own emotional wounds, including the parts of ourselves that we reject, we remain stuck in our injured places and our conditioned patterns. But my own very first experience with the transformative power of compassion happened with a physical injury when I tore a ligament in my knee playing City League basketball. I was unable to bear any weight on my knee and had to crutch around wearing a big external immobilizing brace that announced my injury to everyone. I was super unhappy about this injury. It was very painful, and plus I hated being dependent on others for help in getting around. I resisted the sympathetic attention even strangers would give me as I crutched down the street. I wanted it somehow to just go away. But since after a few days it wasn't going away, I decided to do some imagery to see what I might learn to help my knee heal. And imagery is a tool I've used often to access my own healing wisdom, the body's healing wisdom, actually. So after I settled myself into a more inner focused state, I moved my awareness into my knee. And I asked for an imagining of what it was like there and what was needed. Surprisingly, I got nothing. I couldn't see, hear, or feel anything. It was as if that injured part was completely closed off to me. I was actually really perplexed. Then it occurred to me that contrary to the message that I got growing up, to never feel sorry for yourself because that's weak, so just carry on like you're fine, I thought that it might possibly be helpful to offer some sympathy to myself. After all, this was a serious injury, and I actually couldn't walk. But being unfamiliar with sympathy, I wasn't sure about how to conjure up the feeling, but I gave it a try. I tenderly cupped my hands around my poor swollen knee, and I said as kindly and as open-heartedly as I could, "I'm so sorry you're hurt. I'm so sorry, dear knee, that you have this serious injury. I'm so very sorry this has happened to you." And to my astonishment, I began to cry for myself and my poor injured knee. This was brief weeping, mind you, just a few seconds or maybe a minute, but I did truly feel sorrow for my situation. And then after taking several deep breaths, I decided to try again for an imagining. And suddenly, there it was, as if the door had magically opened or a shield had dissolved. I got a clear image of what it was like in my knee, as well as a definite message about what I could do that would be helpful for it healing, for its healing. I was amazed. Compassion, it seemed, opened my heart to my suffering, opened the channel of connection, and I could receive my mind-body's healing wisdom. Here's another surprising account. While on a different retreat with Pema, she reported a remarkable study of a group of Tibetan monks and nuns who had been released after being imprisoned for many years by the Chinese government. During their imprisonment, they had been routinely tortured, beaten, and raped. Yet amazingly, none of these people showed any signs of PTSD. Shocked by this, the researchers wanted to understand how this was possible. And they learned that throughout their imprisonment, the nuns and monks had been diligently practicing compassion. They offered compassion to themselves and to their perpetrators. And the more they were tortured, the more their compassion practices intensified. This blew my mind. You know, how is this possible? No PTSD after years and years of brutal torture. Was it that compassion kept their hearts open to their own pain and suffering, as well as their jailers, so their suffering could move through them and somehow be transformed? If so, this is really radical. And a recent neuroscience study has revealed a possible explanation for this. It compared what happens in the brain when we feel compassion versus feeling empathy. And the results showed that when we feel empathy, attempting to feel the other's pain as a way to connect, the pain centers in the brain are activated. But when we feel compassion, feeling sorrow that this person is in pain, sympathy, the pleasure centers of the brain are activated. I think this is vitally important information for all of us. Those frontline workers who daily work with people who are suffering, teachers, social workers, nurses, therapists, doctors, caregivers of all kind, those of us who are dealing with family members that are sick and ill, often suffer from burnout because of too much empathy, too much identifying with the other's suffering. However, it appears that learning to practice compassion instead of empathy can make such essential work deeply satisfying and actually renewing. I find in these times of tremendous turmoil, seeing so many people suffering so severely, it's very hard to bear. It's so, so painful at times. I mean, take the immigration situation at the border, for one, where mothers were separated from their children. When I empathize with what it must be like to experience that, it becomes too much for me to open to for more than a few seconds, really. It's too painful. Then my heart shuts, and anger arises at our government and what it's doing, and then blame sets in and spreads. And before I know it, I'm swept up in a whole painful giant knot of pain and powerlessness. So what's the difference then between empathy and compassion? To explore this, you might pause for a moment and reflect on what it's like when you feel empathy. Perhaps when a friend is telling you of some painful experience. Notice for a second what your mind and heart and body do. Don't we recruit a previous experience from our own history that's similar to theirs? And as we remember it, we feel the painful memory in the present moment. In our desire to connect and understand our friend's pain, our own pain centers are activated. And when we feel compassion or sympathy, how is that different? We feel sorrow for the other, but it's not so overwhelming. It's more spacious. Our perspective is different. Isn't it more of a bearing witness to their pain rather than reliving a similar pain? I think it's really quite different. Yet we're trained to empathize. A major role for us as women is to tend to, monitor, and manage relationships, to do the emotional labor of relationships. We're taught that to feel what the other is feeling is key for developing and maintaining connection. Yet this new data tells us feeling empathy is not sustainable and can easily lead to relational breakdowns, where we fake authentic connection when we become exhausted by too much empathizing. I'm sure you felt the pain of pretending to be open, caring, and compassionate when you simply didn't have it to give. We'll often charge ourselves then with being a bad friend or helper, and as we believe that accusation, guilt can suck us into more self-inflicted pain. Is this familiar to you at all? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Given then that empathy creates self-inflicted pain as we connect with someone's pain and isn't sustainable, but compassion makes it possible to companion the other person's pain without being overwhelmed and exhausted by it, how do we cultivate it? What's required? First of all, since feeling pain activates our fear and resistance, we're afraid we won't be able to handle it or we'll be overwhelmed by it, compassion clearly requires us to develop courage, greatness of heart, bravery. Compassion challenges us to develop fearlessness with pain. It also requires radical acceptance. Yes, this is painful right now. This grief, fear, anger, sadness, loneliness, anxiety is difficult right now. This is scary right now. We open to it and completely surrender to the reality that this is what's happening right now. Compassion also requires equanimity. The ability to stay spacious, stable, and steady as we experience what's difficult, instead of contracting, shrinking, and closing down. We learn to cradle the sensations of pain with lots and lots of spaciousness. And this naturally creates stability and inner balance, which makes it possible to sustain our attention as the experience flows through us. It's helpful to remember, as the wise ones say, life is full of 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows. Compassion helps us keep our balance with the instability of life, moment by moment. Accepting the reality of impermanence is essential as well. That everything on every dimension is in the process of change is a fundamental law of nature, and we are nature. So even though this is painful and difficult right now, this experience won't last forever. This too shall pass. This too shall pass. It also requires understanding and remembering the universality of suffering. Every being is subject to dukkha. Misery and suffering is unavoidable, and it's not personal. Even though we are all doing the best we can in every moment, so many conditions are outside of our control. And even though we do these practices to wake up from our conditioning, we're all works in progress. We are imperfect. We make mistakes. We're unskillful at times. We do and will be forgetful. We get caught up in our own desires, and we will lose track of reality over and over, and we suffer. Remembering our imperfectness and our interconnectedness is central here. We're all in the same boat. Compassion also needs the balance of wisdom, not only to hold the wise view that pain is part of being alive and everything is in the process of changing, but it requires seeing reality as clearly as possible. So it's vital to be realistic and practical. And there's a classic story about this. It's always about farmers, these stories. But here it is. A farmer was walking in his field one day near dusk and came across a sick and dying cobra. Feeling so much compassion for this dear creature's state, he gently picked it up and carried it home with him, and tenderly laid the poor, failing cobra in a corner of his room near his bed. Then he went to sleep for the night. When the sun came up the next morning, the farmer was dead and the cobra was gone. We need to balance our sympathy and desire to help with the actual facts of reality. Right? So what can I do to help that's within reach and that's respectful and wise for all concerned, including ourselves? And compassion requires mindfulness, the ability to open precisely to our present moment experience with curiosity, acceptance, kindness, and without identifying with it, without taking it to be me. We're bearing witness to it, inquiring into it, staying on our own side, staying accepting, steady and open to it, as we witness our painful experience or the others, just as it is. And compassion can be tender and soft. Being the dearest mother we can imagine, we swoop up and embrace the crying baby, whoever it is, our dear friend, our neighbor, our client, stranger, or ourself, in our open heart, and offer sympathy, saying, I'm so sorry you're in pain. I'm so sorry this is so difficult. I'm so sorry this is happening for you. May you find ease with this. This is compassion that is comforting, soothing, and validating. And if there's some action we can take that would help relieve the suffering more, we do what we can to help. Compassion is essential for staying connected and loving in our relationships with others and with ourselves. Of course, given our conditioning as women, it often feels easier to offer compassion to others than to ourselves. The tendency to believe that we don't matter as much, or our feelings aren't as important as others, sadly keeps us cut off from our own loving and wise heart. Yet only to the extent that we're able to authentically give compassion to others can we truly authentically say that again. That's right. Ha ha. Yet only to the extent that we're able to authentically give compassion to ourselves can we truly authentically give it to others. I had a profound experience with this on retreat a few years ago. A few days into the retreat, with my mind feeling more settled, my attention was pulled into my relationship with my mom. Our relationship had often felt painful and disappointing to me. I longed for emotional closeness, but she was rarely available. She was a dedicated planner, and she seemed habitually preoccupied with preparing for future events and quietly anxious over what might come. Although I never told her about this, I felt sad and hurt by her seeming lack of interest in me. Intellectually, I knew she loved me and I her, but emotionally it felt dry and superficial between us, like our hearts were closed to each other. I was attached to wanting much more. As this meditation continued, my attention was drawn into recalling memories of our interactions and the pain of feeling disconnected, hurt, angry, and blaming. I was blaming her for not loving me better, blaming myself for not being a better daughter, and for not being able to accept what is and let go of what I wanted from her. As I opened to these feelings, holding their sensations spaciously, out of the blue, I suddenly remembered these compassionate phrases. I'm so sorry for my pain. I'm so sorry this is so hard for me. May I care for my pain? And honestly, not at all sure that these words would be of any use, I nevertheless said them to myself with as much warmth and sincerity as I could muster. And I repeated them a number of times. And then to my amazement, my closed heart suddenly opened and I began to weep and feel tremendous sadness. I felt so sad for myself and so sad for my mom. I felt sad that we couldn't connect with each other and that we had missed so much of each other as we grew older together. I felt such sadness that we hadn't been able to know each other more deeply. And as I stayed with this sadness, letting it all be, still offering, I'm so sorry for this pain. I'm so sorry this is so painful for me. Suddenly, the dark sadness shifted into lightness, as if the sun had just come out. It felt alchemical. I felt such softness for both of us. And I realized that all along we'd both been doing the very best we could, given each of our conditioning. I felt tremendous acceptance of both of us. We were both caught in the conditions that existed and weren't able to do anything differently than we did. I forgave her and I forgave myself. And those moments of offering heartfelt compassion through sympathetic phrases seemed to allow my heart to relax and open, and I could naturally release my attachment to what I'd been clinging to for years, wanting my mother to be the kind of mother I'd always wanted. I could open to and feel the pain of what had been, accept what actually is, and forgive us both. It was profoundly healing and liberating, truly. And this experience changed my relationship with my mom. It lightened up and shifted from feeling disappointed in our connection to being able to see her more clearly as a separate person and simply different from me. And at the same time, I could cradle my feelings of wanting more intimacy with genuine acceptance and compassion. I stopped making myself wrong for wanting that. This made the remaining years of our time together much sweeter, and I was so grateful that I could authentically compassion the pain she felt as her body gradually came to the end of its life. I became a better daughter. With my heart open to both of us, I could be present and give both of us more of the loving attention we each needed. But besides being warm, validating, and comforting, compassion can also be fierce. It can be wisely protective. Out of love and wisdom, seeing reality clearly, you can compassionately say no to an action that is or could be harmful. It's about having clear boundaries and wise boundaries that prevent or stop suffering from happening. Sharon Salzberg had an experience during her early days in India learning about Buddhism and this aspect of compassion. Perhaps you know this story. She was traveling with a friend through Calcutta on their way to the train station to get to their next teacher. The rickshaw driver decided to take them through a back alley as a shortcut to the station. And as they went through that alley, a man tried to pull Sharon out of the rickshaw, apparently to rob or hurt her in some way. Fortunately, her friend managed to pull her back in, and they escaped unharmed. But Sharon was very upset about this, and being a new student, she was especially concerned with what would have been the correct Buddhist response to this incident. So when they arrived at their next teacher, she explained what happened and asked what she should have done. Her teacher listened very carefully and then said, "Well, my dear, with all the love in your heart, you should have taken out your umbrella and hit that man over his head as hard as you could." This was clear instruction in fierce compassion. Not only would this have stopped the man from hurting Sharon, which was self-protective, it was also protective of him. By stopping him from hurting her, she would have prevented him from committing a harmful act that would have added to his negative karma. Saying, "No, you may not harm me," via her umbrella with love in her heart, would have been an act of loving kindness for both Sharon and the attacker. Clearly, the challenging part of fierce compassion is to offer it with love in our heart instead of hatred. Yet we've all used our fierce umbrella of compassion when we've protected a child from harm or advised a dear friend caught in terrible pain to not do something that would make the situation worse for them. This is the power of fierce mother bear compassion, and we can use it in our relationships with others and with ourselves. Since patriarchy has trained us to be nice and pleasing and compliant, to not rock the boat, many of us have learned to tolerate abuse, discomfort, and to bend over backwards to avoid causing uneasiness for others. We've learned to silence ourselves instead of speaking up in protest when we've been harmed, dismissed, or denigrated. But we need to understand that anger and resolve are part of fierce compassion. Acquiescing to mistreatment is not wise, kind, or compassionate. By enduring abuse from another, We hurt ourselves, and inadvertently we contribute to the other person's suffering as well. If you recall the five remembrances, it is only our actions, which includes non-action, that are our true belongings. Our actions always have consequences. So when someone mistreats us or tries to get us to do something we don't want to do that would be hurtful to ourselves or to someone else, or they're expressing a view we believe is harmful, out of compassion, we need to pull out our umbrella and with love in our heart say no firmly. In doing this, there is no need to explain or rationalize our refusal. It's vital to understand that no is a complete sentence. No is a complete sentence, right? And as Kristen Neff, who's been researching and teaching self-compassion, says, women need to fully embrace and integrate both tender and fierce compassion if we're ever going to free ourselves from patriarchy. A woman in my practice class, Mary, reported this act of fierce compassion. She was at the UW Memorial Union helping students register to vote for the midterm elections when a co-ed, who had been helping too, returned from a break, extremely upset, her body trembling uncontrollably. She said two young men had approached her, one with a microphone, the other attempting to aim his smartphone under her skirt. The man with the mic asked her, "How do you feel about Bush? What's your opinion of Bush?" It took her a second to realize what was happening, and then, stunned and freaked out, she immediately fled. Mary first hugged and comforted this woman and reassured her that this was not her fault, and it was traumatic and wrong. And a few moments later, the co-ed spotted the two men walking into the area. Mary walked swiftly over to them and firmly said, "What you just did to this young woman was wrong. You violated and hurt her. This is sexual abuse. Don't ever, ever do this again." Then she turned and walked away. She whacked them with her umbrella of fierce compassion. And at my mother-in-law's memorial service, my spouse Pam gave this account of one of her mother's acts of fierce compassion. She said, "Our family was camping in Florida in the late 1960s or so, and we went to a Baptist church one Sunday in St. Augustine. Somewhere during the sermon, the pastor talked about the civil rights leader, referring to him as Martin Luther Coon. My mother immediately stood up, grabbed my dad's hands, snapped her fingers at us kids, and marched us down the aisle, outside of the church, into the car, where we sat silently until the church service let out. Mom then hopped out of the car, and we watched her go right up to the pastor and have a firm conversation with him. She knew right from wrong, and her bravery shaped us." There are times when it's skillful to use our umbrella of fierce compassion with ourselves, too. When we realize we're caught in some version of turning against ourselves, and we need to protect the boundary from the conditioned mind's habits. Like when the judging mind is on the rampage, flinging old conditioned lies about ourselves, and we can't stop coming to those familiar negative conclusions. "I'm so messed up. I'm never enough. I'm broken. I'll always be anxious, judgmental, lonely," or fill in the blank of your most popular incorrect view of yourself. We can also use it when we're caught in obsessing about something or stuck in scary what-if stories about what we're afraid will happen, and we just can't stop thinking about it. Then, because we understand our reaction is conditioned and not who we truly are, and we know we're hurting ourselves, we can pull out our umbrella of fierce compassion and say firmly to herself, "Not here, not now, no." The tricky yet critical part is to apply our umbrella out of love, not hatred towards ourselves. Perhaps with ourselves it's more of a gentle tap rather than a whap. A firm reminder to treat ourselves lovingly and wisely, no matter what. Practicing compassion with others, whether it's tender or fierce, is very advanced spiritual practice because it involves being compassionate with them and ourselves at the same time. To be open and steady with the other's anger, fear, or sadness means not shutting down on them, but also not shutting down on ourselves when we start to feel uncomfortable. In these times with so much political upheaval, seeing so many people acting out their pain aggressively, violating values we passionately hold dear and right, we can easily slam our own hearts shut in rejection and fear, thinking, what's the matter with you people? Don't you know everyone matters and deserves to be included and treated well? Or when we're listening to a dear friend who's struggling with loss, anxiety, or guilt, and our judging mind snaps with something like, geez, you're upset about that still? As if our own view is the view, forgetting that only the person who is suffering is the rightful judge of their pain. Practicing compassion with others means allowing ourselves to feel whatever we feel and not push it away. It means accepting every part of ourselves, including the parts we don't like, feeling our own anger, fear, hatred, and aggression. We'll want to shut down and pull away from their distress because it taps into parts of ourselves we can't stand. Yet the more we can accept and compassionately open to these painful parts in ourselves, the more we can understand and open to it when we see it in others. So as we practice the radical mindset of compassion here in this retreat, and when we're back into our familiar world, whenever we realize we're experiencing some kind of misery, we can say to ourselves, oh, this is a moment of suffering, and it's part of being human. We can turn mindfully towards the direct experience and explore it, open to the uncomfortable feelings with curiosity, acceptance, kindness, bearing witness to it, not taking it personally, letting it be, giving it lots of space. Then we can ask, what would be a wise and compassionate response? We might offer ourselves comfort, saying, I'm so sorry this is so hard for me right now. May I find ease with this pain? Or perhaps we take ourselves a walk in nature, or a soothing bath, or talk to a trusted friend. On the other hand, the wise action might call for fierce compassion, with love in our heart, using our inner umbrella to say, no, not here, not now. And when we witness others caught up in suffering, same thing. We can note it as suffering, remembering we're all in the same boat, and we all want to be happy and free from suffering. We can open mindfully to how we're experiencing their pain, accepting it and letting it be, keeping our heart open to ourselves and to them to maintain our love connection. Then do whatever we can to offer comfort and relief. And when their suffering is expressed through aggression or hatred, we can empower ourselves out of love to use our umbrella of fierce compassion to say, no, absolutely not. We need to practice this if we're going to effectively stand up to patriarchy, racism, all forms of bigotry, and the people in power who are destroying our planet. We need to practice both tender and fierce compassion. As the Buddha said, hatred never ceases by hatred, by love alone is healed. This is the eternal law. So I want to end by reading a poem by Naomi Shihab Nye called Kindness. This is one of my favorite poems. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolved in a moment like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop, the passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out of the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept them alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore, only kindness that ties your shoes and sent you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, it is I you've been looking for, and then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend. Let's just sit with ourselves for a few moments.